Hey everyone, on this episode of Cowcast, we have some recordings inserted from the DC Retailer Rebirth Summit from Jim Lee and Dan DiDio. Just a quick apology ahead of time. Some of the clips may be a little bit tough to hear just because of the echo from the room, but I did my best to make sure they're cleaned up for you so you get them. We will also be posting a relatively uncut version in the next week or so that has more detailed information than what James and I may have gone into, just for your listening pleasure. So with that, we'll let the episode run. Hopefully you enjoy it. All right, welcome to the third episode of Cowcast. I am Eric Helwig.
I am James Bula from Cowabunga Comics.
And we are here to talk to you about
the DC Retailer Roadshow, which we gave you a little hint about last week. And we're going to be talking quite a bit about that tonight. And we are going to have some exclusive audio clips from the DC Retailer Roadshow from Jim Lee and Dan DiDio. We're going into this tonight right after the Two Cows Trivia down at the Crafty Cow that we run every other Tuesday, and some Tuesdays in between, like next week when we run our Civil War Trivia, which should be a good time. But this is going to be one of the more fun podcasts that we have done because I've been drinking for the last 3 hours. So,
and I've been catching up in the last 30 minutes.
It's true. It's true. And we're trying to keep pace right now. But I promise a nice, clean trivia.
That's right.
Wait. Podcast.
Nice, clean podcast.
Wait.
Now.
Somebody's been drinking.
I'm catching up, so it must have been you. Either way, so the DC...
The trivia was clean, too, though.
Was it?
It was.
Good. The DC Roadshow, the Rebirth Roadshow, that was held in Rosemont, Illinois, and we had a nice day, just drove down, kind of made a few stops along the way, and when we got there, we kind of didn't really know what to expect. We knew that we were going to be hearing from Jim Lee and Dan DiDio a little bit about what Rebirth is, why they're doing it, what the rollout plan is, and a lot of those things. But what we didn't expect was we did not expect to see and get to meet a number of the different DC executives that came along. We made a lot of great connections with different folks. We were able to kind of get some ideas as to what we can do related to our advertising campaigns and things like that. So to me, right off the bat, that was kind of a surprise and a very welcome one.
Well, the first person that we talked to when we were at the check-in desk was, I'm going to butcher the name, but Aileen Lujo, who's the director of marketing for DC Entertainment. She was super cool, really nice.
She predominantly works with the Vertigo line. I think she said about 80% of her day-to-day.
Right. And she, you know, right off the bat, we were talking to her for a little while. We got DC and her, of course, they were gracious enough to give us a copy of Paul Dini's book that I think it's coming out in June or July called Dark Knight, A True Batman Story. It's a Vertigo published book. We were talking about that a little bit earlier. It's a phenomenal book. But we got an advanced reader's copy of it, which was really, really cool. I know we've had a couple of customers that have requested the book already, and I was going to check it out. I read it. Anybody who added it to their pull list, you were right. It was a great book. Very well done. And Eduardo Risso's art was awesome. So it was really neat to get an advanced copy of that. Mm-hmm. And she was very outgoing, very cool. Got a lot of neat insight into the day-to-day operations of the DC offices, mm-hmm. Things like that. So right off the bat, it was really cool before we had even gone into the main hall where the roadshow was going to be taking place. After we had checked in, they did give us some cool
promotional items
which were pretty neat. A DC Rebirth like a print, a Scooby Apocalypse print, and a Future Quest print. And then we stuck around a little while. We met some people that have stores in Illinois, all very nice people.
Minnesota.
That's well,
long drive.
Yeah, exactly. And then they opened the doors. And so the first thing that we went into this room where they were hosting, and the first thing we saw was, Dan DiDio up kind of fixing his podium.
Yeah.
And
like not just a quick fix. He was up there for like 5-10 minutes, just
right. I think he was getting his talking points in order, and so we decided to head right up there, and you know, we thought, hey, there's Dan DiDio. Let's go talk to him. What a nice guy. Very cool guy. We gave him a cow bobblehead, which we have.
He carried that thing all night with him.
Yep.
It was hysterical. Everywhere he went, there was a white box in tow.
Yeah. So that was very cool. And when we first went up there, we had asked, you know, should we, like, Dan, can we sit up here? We noticed some microphones on these front tables. Are these the executive spots? Should we be sitting back there? And he was like, no, you guys sit wherever you want. So we sat right in that front row, which led to, like, 15 minutes later, me sitting next to Jim Lee for, you know, I don't know,
25 minutes
while we were waiting for them to go on. So that was pretty cool.
Yep.
Turns out that kind of was that DC executive front row, but DiDio was cool enough to.
He was more than happy to have us sit there.
Yeah. So that was great. I mean, right off the bat, you know, it was really cool. We made some neat contacts. We got some cool stuff. I thought, you know, we were off to a great start. I thought it was going to be, it was going to be very, very educational as far as them, kind of going in depth into the story of what Rebirth is going to be, how they plan to implement it. They kicked off the official, I guess you would call it, presentation, probably about 30 minutes after we got there.
Yeah. Something like that. I thought it was interesting. So I honestly went into it not knowing exactly what we were going to get out of it. I didn't know if it was going to be just kind of a canned presentation. You come in, this is what we're going to tell you. You can ask a few questions about pricing, shipping, whatever, and then you're done. Mm-hmm. You know, we're all going to leave. You guys can hang around for a little bit and talk to one another and then have a good night. I just didn't know what to expect. And whatever low bar I had set for the evening was just completely shattered.
Well, when we first got there, it was at the Hyatt Regency in Rosemont. Rosemont, for comic readers and collectors, of course, is known mostly for Wizard World Chicago, which is not in Chicago proper, but in Rosemont at the Donald E. Stevens Convention Center. So this is going to be my 24th year going. I've been going for a long, long time. And, you know, the one year that I missed going to Wizard World was when I was on my honeymoon, which I thought was a pretty good excuse.
Yeah.
But I've stayed at that Hyatt Regency before for comic related reasons. So it was kind of neat to be back there for this road show. But when we first got there and we were trying to find out where the road show was, there were a lot of other things going on. There was like a podiatrist meeting or something that was going on in one of the conference halls. And then there was something about
vascular health. Conference.
Yeah. Vascular health. And there was another thing about joint pains.
It was interesting.
Yeah. You know, we kept seeing all these other things. So they have this big kind of interactive screen where you can look for whatever event or room you're going to be going to or seeking out. The DC Roadshow said that it was from 6:30 to 9:30 in one room, and then from 9:30 to 10:30 in another room, which didn't end up being the case.
Right.
But it sort of, I guess it set the stage for what we were expecting, which was going to be, like you said, sort of a canned thing. And then we go into some other room and, you know, maybe
it's like a social hour.
Right. Exactly.
And then we're done.
Which was, it certainly didn't turn out that way, but we'll get to that later.
Yep.
So like we said, after about 30 minutes of being there, DiDio and Jim Lee got up on at these podiums, and they started off with a slideshow. Yep. And the first thing, they didn't go right into Rebirth right away. The first thing they went into were the Hanna-Barbera properties.
Right.
They started with Scooby Apocalypse, then they did, Future Quest, Wacky Raceland,
Flintstones.
And Flintstones. So that was, I mean, I guess that was smart because everybody was there for Rebirth. And
right.
We haven't had anybody that was, I think we've had more than anything, we've had people rolling their eyes at the Hanna-Barbera relaunch, especially the Scooby thing. So we haven't had a lot of people that have been excited about it, but I can tell you that after listening to what DiDio and Jim Lee had to say about it, you could tell that they were, at the very least, passionate about the product that they were putting out.
This is the one that we get the most excited about, after, at least I get the most excited about. We have a lot of things we want to cover. We go into the, we start to explain a little wrong about Rebirth and a lot of plans behind there. But one of the things we decided to do when we were going to Rebirth, you'll see it as we start to unfold it, and you probably realize we're really trying to focus primarily on the core line, key characters, and really trying to build out on a lot of the franchises in a way that most people recognize them and have a sense of familiarity, and so therefore we really keep our base very strong. But we do want to keep on pushing out the diversity and different styles of product, because we know there's new audience out there, and we're always trying to bring them in through different ways. So one of the things that's happened, and from my standpoint, this is something that was really exciting. When I first got to DC Comics, I loved all the Hanna-Barbera characters. Loved all that stuff. And we had the chance to do a mini-series with Ariel Olivetti and Joe Kelly, which was Space Ghost. Beautiful Alex Cross covers, beautiful book. Sold incredibly well for us. And then lo and behold, after we did our first mini-series, we were set to do more with other characters, we were ready to build it out, and lo and behold, our consumer product department Marvel said stop. Doesn't make enough money for the company, no sense to do it. So they stopped us from doing it. But it's always been a big passion of ours, and we know there's a lot of interest in these characters from our fans, and we know that they had success with other companies over the years. So always chasing after it, and now we flash forward to this year, when Diane Nelson, our boss, was put in charge of consumer products. She knew about the interest, and then she came over, as I love to tell the story, one day with a big, thick phone book of characters, about this thick, dumped it on the desk and said, this is all the Hanna-Barbera characters, have fun. And at that moment, we knew we were in fun game. So we knew we were able to do something really fun with these things and push them out. So we went out and we looked through the four ideas, and we really wanted to expand, not just take these things and do it as we see it as the regular shows, but really try to find ways to reinvent them a little bit, get them to find new ways to tell stories, and really take advantage of the fan base there, but really launch them in new directions. So we have four new series coming, built off the Hanna-Barbera brand that we feel very strong about.
I think I'm a little bit more interested in it than I was before going into it. How did you feel?
Yeah, I didn't really give it a second thought. Obviously, Johnny Quest being a part of the Future Quest book, you know, that's something from our childhood.
Oh, a Johnny Quest Space Ghost
right.
humanoid steam up.
So that pretty was, cool. You know, that was on the radar. It wasn't something that I was really personally looking at picking up, but walking away from the Hanna-Barbera discussion, for me, the one that really stuck out was the Wacky Raceland.
Mm-hmm.
The way that they pitched it, basically stating that it's a race to utopia. Only one person can win, but all must be alive. That's kind of an interesting premise. So that really got me kind of jazzed up. And then with the Scooby Apocalypse, with Jim Lee being a part of
it. The Wacky Raceland thing basically sounds, and I think everybody knew that this is what they were going for, but it sounds like it sort of spun out of the success of Mad Max Fury Road.
Exactly.
But
I think they used that analogy. They said it's like Mad Max just, how do they say it? It's like Mad Max.
I don't know. I guess it's less lethal though.
Right.
As you said, the plot line is it's a post-apocalyptic future and you can get into it. There's only one person that can get into it, but everyone that starts the race has to finish it. So you can't just kill off the other drivers. So
you actually have to work together.
Right, which is how I think they're going to be able to keep it still grim and gritty, but tied into the Hanna-Barbera sort of all-ages feel that it should have. And the art looked phenomenal.
Yeah, that did look really cool. And then we talked a little bit about the Scooby Apocalypse, Jim Lee being part of the storyboarding, mm-hmm. and you know, we'll see how that goes. Obviously, he'll have a direct hand in the artwork in some fashion or another if he's handling that capacity, whether it's, you know, more oversight or whatnot. But I think that's another title to look at.
It sounds like Jim Lee's contribution to the story is going to, he's credited as a plotter, which means he's not actually writing the script, but he's writing kind of a loose outline of the story, handing it over to the scripters, who I believe are Keith Giffen and J.M. DeMatteis. And he's doing some of the character design. So he'll be doing covers. He did the character designs for, you know, the Scooby Gang, probably for some of the villains. But he's not actually going to be doing any of the art. So it sounds like his association with the book is going to be a little bit looser. But obviously the Jim Lee name will help carry
some weight.
Right.
What about you? Is there anything that we didn't mention that you took away from Hanna-Barbera that you were maybe a little impressed or surprised about?
Well, I did like the, ever since they announced it, I thought Future Quest was the series that I would have the most interest in because it took all of these characters and put them together. It's sort of like, well, you know, who hasn't wanted to see, I remember when I was younger, I always wanted to see like the A-Team teaming up with MacGyver and like Magnum PI, you know, and this is kind of the, this is kind of Dan DiDio and I grew up in the 80s and in the 90s. So that was what I had been sort of, really into at the time with Dan DiDio and Jim Lee. Those guys are, you know, I think they're in their 50s now, mm-hmm. and they grew up with Hanna-Barbera. So they're taking all of these characters and these intellectual properties that they grew up with, like the humanoids and Johnny Quest and Space Ghost, and they're able to put them together and have them on a team for pretty much the first time ever. Right. I think most people our age or most millennials' associations with Space Ghost are going to be Coast to Coast, which I did love, but one of the things that the DO cited during this presentation was the Joe Kelly and Ariel Olivetti Space Ghost series that came out in the early 2000s, which is a great series. If you've never read it, I think we've actually got a couple copies of it on the shelf. You should come in and buy it. But it was a really good Space Ghost series. It kind of reinterpreted it as more of a darker, mature storyline. It wasn't like a mature reader's story, but it definitely upped it to being a serious topic. You know, the whole Space Ghost subject matter was sort of elevated. And I think what they're going for in Future Quest is kind of more of that same feel. He had mentioned how they had talked about doing something like that way back when they did the Space Ghost series. And obviously there were some kind of legal issues that came up, some sort of property rights issues, and they had to pull back from doing Space Ghost. So, or more with the Hanna-Barbera characters in general. And so I think this is probably something that they've had ideas for a long time,
right?
Both in the DC offices and probably since their childhood. So I'm willing to give this the benefit of the doubt and take a chance on it.
Yeah. And I think the other, you know, the last part that we didn't, or the last, book that we didn't really spend a lot of time talking about is the Flintstones. And the big takeaways that I got from that are they kind of updated the look a little bit by mm-hmm. making Pebbles and Bam Bam tweens instead of little kids, trying to maybe boost their age a little bit, get some of those people that may be in the Jim Lee, Dan DiDio age bracket, maybe our age bracket, kind of the low 30s, upper 20s, mm-hmm. make it something that's still accessible for them, but yet still accessible for younger audiences.
Yeah, no Stephen Baldwin or Rosie O'Donnell in this one either, so...
Yeah.
You know, just step up.
Well, I know John Goodman.
John Goodman, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he was like the one good part.
Yeah.
But anyway.
We digress. On to the next item. So after we talked about the Hanna-Barbera properties, we jumped into the kind of the new creator-owned line-ish, so to speak, the way that they're kind of phrasing is creator-owned properties, mm-hmm. Being the DC's Young Animal.
Trying something new with DC's Young Animals. And I'll turn that to you.
Sure. So, how many of you guys are familiar with Gerard Way? He's a frontman, right? A lot of people, great. So, yeah, you guys know he's a former frontman for the My Chemical Romance, writer, creator of Umbrella Academy for Dark Horse. He's also a huge, huge DC fan. He was actually a DC intern back in the early 2000s. He went to art school at SVA. And he's always had a soft spot for DC characters. So he actually came in, because he's local, and he looked through this encyclopedia of DC characters, and he wanted to spend some time away from music for about a couple years and really focus on just comics writing. He wanted to specifically focus on a project for DC. And if you know his music and you know kind of his message, you know that it's not going to be the traditional superhero kind of material. And so we really kind of leaned into that. We said, but why don't you pick some eclectic characters? And we'll build sort of a mini, what we call a pop-up imprint. It's basically an imprint that emerges because of his interest, his desire, his passion for these characters. And we'll continue to do it for as long as he wants to run this imprint. And so he came up with four titles, one of which he's writing and one he's co-writing. share kind of similar tonality. They all speak to kind of alienation, living on the fringe, and how you can kind of save yourself through creativity or love or passion. I think these are things he addresses in his music, and so it's not surprising to see that reflected in the work itself. And to us, it's a nice blend of kind of bold vertigo in terms of tonality and creative first approach to comic book making, and a combination of DCU. These characters are going to exist in the DC universe, albeit on the fringe of continuity. And they almost have a continuity that runs through the four books themselves, but they are part of the DCU and they are a mature audience. And we're really encouraging him to take a very different approach, because we know that his fan base is predominantly female, younger, a different audience altogether. He's got millions of followers on Twitter and Instagram, and we really expect this to break out in a big way amongst people that don't necessarily traditionally read and follow comic books. So here are the four books.
What do you have about that?
Well, the Young Animal line has... it's being touted by DC as sort of a millennial version almost of the Vertigo line.
Right.
But it's masterminded by Gerard Way, who is the main, I guess, the main guy behind My Chemical Romance. Can't say I know too much about their music. I hope I don't alienate people saying that, but I don't. But the cool thing is he's got a ginormous fan base, a built-in fan base for DC. And he is a very, very creative guy. He did the Umbrella Academy series for Dark Horse. I think he did two of them, which were very highly rated. And a lot of the reviews of his work that I've read has sort of touted him as a young Grant Morrison. And I don't think you could really get better praise than that.
Yeah, I think one thing that was interesting hearing Jim talk about specifically was Gerard really, he put his music career basically on hold to be a writer,
mm-hmm.
and specifically to write comics. It's something he felt very strongly about. So he hasn't really been touching his music at all. He's been doing more of this comic line. And the reason that they felt that this would be a good pairing was because of the social media following that he has and the new ways that he reaches out to his fan base and grows his fan base, being something that obviously comics need. So they were talking to him about different ways of marketing this product, different things that they could do as far as branding, as far as presentation, anything and everything. And apparently he's brought a lot of really cool creative ideas to the table. Now, how they'll pan out, will we see them? Maybe we'll see them at San Diego when we're out there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, but I think it's a really cool... it's cool that they're taking a look at other ways of getting people into the medium.
Yeah, and in looking at the Grant Morrison comparison that was made, you think about, and in the comparison that the Young Animal line was given towards Vertigo, when Vertigo was sort of in its infancy, you had books that Grant Morrison was working on, like Doom Patrol, and which is going to be a part of the Young Animal line. Gerard Way is going to be working on a Doom Patrol book, but also a Cave Carson book. And I think about, you know, Grant Morrison coming in. Now, it didn't start as Vertigo. It started as a straight DC book, but it ended up Vertigo. But Grant Morrison's Animal Man was another character who was kind of long forgotten and was never an A-lister or a B-lister or even a C-lister. Animal Man was very much a D-list character. And I think when anyone thinks of Animal Man or the Doom Patrol, I think most people just go right to the Grant Morrison interpretations of those characters. So it'll be interesting to see if he can do the same thing with characters like Cave Carson. And obviously he's kind of taking the challenge with Doom Patrol of trying to tell a relevant Doom Patrol story. With Doom Patrol, I've read a lot of the Doom Patrol that has come out since Morrison, and everything always just kind of feels like it's trying to, you know, go in such an opposite direction from what Morrison did, because why even try to continue what he did?
Right.
That it fails, or it tries to continue what he did, and it just seems like a cheap copy of it. So it would be nice if we could get a fresh take on Doom Patrol that didn't either try to ape or completely avoid Grant Morrison's take. And it sounds like another observation was talking about the Young Animal line, a lot of this other stuff, Dan DiDio sort of spearheaded the discussion about it. With the Young Animal line, it was mostly Jim Lee, and Jim Lee seemed very, very galvanized and very excited talking about the ideas that Gerard Way was bringing into the company. I think it sounds like Jim Lee has been working with Gerard Way quite a bit personally to try to mastermind this and kind of get this imprint up and running.
Yep.
And so it was neat to see him take such an interest and have such enthusiasm pitching the imprint.
Well, and I wonder if part of that isn't because of Jim Lee's creative nature and finally having, you know, a new angle on creativity coming in and giving him new ideas, fresh perspective, and then also allowing him to teach and mentor. I mean, that was a real common theme throughout the whole night, was Dan would continuously hand it over to Jim and say, you know, can you talk about the art? Can you talk about what you're doing? And it was very clear that Jim's going to have a much more, I don't want to say hands-on approach, because that almost sounds like he's going to get in the way, but he's definitely seems to be stepping into a very strong coaching and mentoring role, whether he had it before or not. Mm-hmm. He's definitely taking it seriously. He's been spending a lot of time with both Gerard Way, the Hanna-Barbera stuff, and then all of the Rebirth, and actually really kind of focusing on what are we trying to do here and how do we want to do it? Kind of create the game plan. Let's just not shoot from the hip.
Yeah, and, you know, not to jump the gun on anything, but afterwards, and we can get back to this a little bit later, but we spent some one-on-one time with Jim Lee, and he was a cool, humble guy.
Yeah.
One of the questions that I asked him, though, was how do you balance coming from the creative side, being an artist, being a writer? Obviously, he's mostly known for his art, but, you know, he created Wildcats, and he's done some writing of his own. How easy is it to transition from doing that into more of an executive position in a company like that? You know, do you have that? Obviously, he's working on books. You know, New 52, he did Justice League. He's doing the Suicide Squad book coming out for Rebirth. But I said, do you ever have that kind of longing to just go back to doing art on a book and not having to make a lot of these decisions? And he said, you know, it was sort of a, you know, a generic answer, but at the same time, it totally answered the question. He said, it's something that it's kind of tough, but you got to balance everything. Mm-hmm. So I think he's probably a guy who is at that point in his life where he's done it all. You know, he's been the A-list artist, and now he can kind of try to foster new talent.
Yeah. He's not coasting. That's the
cool
thing.
Oh no, absolutely not.
He's trying to promote the medium. He's trying to share what he's learned.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was very obvious. One of the coolest things about how he answered questions, if you asked him, was he would give the very correct and cordial response that he needed to, but he would always give you the facial impression of how he really felt. Like, you ask a question and you would see him kind of say, yeah, but he would have a huge smile on his face. So you knew he was jazzed up and excited about
it. And one of the best examples of that was after they gave their initial presentation, they went into kind of a Q&A, a general Q&A session,
yep.
as far as the creative line goes. So they had a separate presentation afterwards about marketing and advertising, et cetera. But I had asked about, because when they did the whole presentation, you'll notice in your DC previews, one of the things they don't talk about at all is the Wildstorm universe, and they don't mention the Wildstorm characters. So I had asked, I said, I didn't see those in any of these presentations that were given. Is there a plan for the characters? And you saw Jim Lee, he was the one that answered it, you know, and he had a big grin on his face. He said, yeah, there are some plans.
Are
and
some
that was
plans.
All he said.
He kind of looked at Dan and was like, kind of that, what am I allowed to say?
Right. But it was funny because when he said that, DiDio said, that's the most I've heard you say about that yet. So afterwards, when we got a little one-on-one time with him, I said, now look, I said, I'm a big Wildstorm fan. I love Grifter. I love Wildcats 3.0 is one of my favorite comic runs. Am I going to get some Grifter, some Spartan? He's like, we don't want to rush it, but I can tell you that we've got some incredible talent that's sort of putting their heads together to work on the next iteration of Wildstorm. So it sounds like he said, they're not rushing it, and they're waiting to get the best probably the best writers, the best artists. They want the best pitches
yep.
for where to go with the characters. I couldn't get any more information out of him. I tried. For all you Wildstorm fans, I tried with Jim Lee. And obviously he is still very invested in the characters and the universe that he created.
Yep.
And I think it'll be neat to see where they end up going. But like I said, it sounds like he is really waiting for just the perfect angle for them to move forward on that. And again, that was neat to see that engagement with Jim Lee, where I'm sure he's probably gotten 100 questions about Batman and Suicide Squad, but with Wildstorm, you could really see him kind of lighten up, you know, and it really, really tickled him.
Yeah. Should we jump back to the Young Animal stuff real quick?
We got
two more
do.
Titles to talk about.
We do.
All right. So the third one is Shade the Changing Girl. This one I think is going to be kind of interesting. So it's basically an alien taking over the body of a 16-year-old bully. This girl was basically, I think they were saying she's like in a coma or some medically something or other and wasn't really expected to return.
This is another title carrying on that sort of feel of a young Vertigo imprint, because the original Shade the Changing Man was an early 90s Pete Milligan Vertigo title that was pretty groundbreaking for its day. I read the whole Pete Milligan run, and it was a great series. This is Shade the Changing Girl. So again, much like Doom Patrol, it's taking an old Vertigo property that was, you know, pretty much definitively written by that Vertigo writer and is trying to do something fresh with it. And I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's basically, they're going to explore this bully is now back and people don't want her back, but now that she is back, she's not the bully she was. And so kind of trying to refine how she fits and, and all that's going to be interesting. It's for those that care, it's going to be written by Cecil Castellucci, and the art will be by Marley Zarconi with Becky Cloonan covers. So the last one, the fourth one, the creator-owned, I guess is what they're calling of all this, is Mother Panic.
Mother Panic. So of the four, this is actually a creator-owned one. This is a new character that Gerard has created. It's going to be drawn by Tommy Edwards, John Paul Leon, and Sean Crystal, right?
Sean Crystal.
So this is written by newcomer Jody Houser, who's done some work with Valley. This premise is essentially what if Courtney Love were a cybernetically augmented addict fighting crime? And so it's a character who's a member of high society in Gotham City that fights the underbelly of people that are, you know, heirs to great fortunes. And, you know, one of the fun things that we have when Jar comes in is really talking about how ways to do this line and market it and sell it in different ways. And he wants to do a little, what was it called, a little dummy, it's ashcan. He's going to do ashcan. And we were talking about, well, maybe we should hire Jose Garcia Lopez to do a 1960s fake cover of Mother Panic. And we'll print the comic and we'll blank it, so I'll slap it. And we'll put it on the marketplace and it'll look like a comic book from like the 70s. Just to kind of like mess with people and just kind of have fun with the material and the whole fact that, you know, no one really knows the entire history of everything. And that's the fun part of what he's doing. He's really going in and digging in deep and pulling out these C-level, D-level characters and trying to really elevate them to great interest. So Mother Panic was awesome. It's very evocative, very dramatic, gothic, and again, it's the first R-rated book set in Gotham City.
The only original IP in the entire line.
Yep.
Because the other ones, as we have said ad nauseum now, are either reinterpretations or continuations of old DC or Vertigo properties. This is a brand new property.
And as the guy wearing the Batman shirt right now, I'm excited about this one. Because this takes place in Gotham. It's the R-rated title out of the lineup. It is something that Gerard is really putting his creative mind to. He's talking about ash cans and all sorts of different ways of promoting this. It's going to be Violet Page, who is a celebrity heiress by day and a vigilante by night, taking on the underbelly of Gotham City's high society. I believe I could be wrong because we heard a lot that night, but I thought I heard there might be a little bit of a tie-in with the Court of Owls to this. Mm-hmm. So that's one way that they're keeping the New 52, you know, back fresh still in the old continuity. But this, I think, is going to be the one for people to keep an eye on just because it is completely creator-owned. It is in Gotham. And like I said, it's that only R-rated title. And what we've talked about so far haven't necessarily been R-rated titles. They've been either teen or tween age titles, or maybe just kind of the generic run of the mill. So
now I'm not sure. But I believe that it's not an all ages line. I think I'm pretty sure it's a mature readers line.
I don't know if all of it is. Some of it I think is definitely geared towards that. But I don't know if all of it was. Either way, I know it was definitely not geared towards younger kids.
Right.
So
those are the big new imprints that are going to be coming out. The Hanna-Barbera and Young Animal.
Some of the styles and some of the looks that'll be coming over from Rebirth. This is the project that's been in the making for a while over at DC. And let's ratchet back. Let's roll back the clock a little bit to say, why have we done it? How did we get here? I think this is about a third or fourth roadshow. We did roadshows when we did New 52, and you know, there was all the rage about New 52. The world was coming to an end, everybody was stopping by DC Comics, who was all gonna stop. You know, and that was the case there, and ultimately it worked out extraordinarily well for everybody. Hopefully, I believe every store did well during those days. At the early days, the launch of New 52. Then we went back out and we did another once when we did the lenticular covers, and we had problems there about explaining how that worked. We went out and we explained the lenticular covers, and there was a lot of rage attached to lenticular covers. And I think that worked out well for everybody too. The first round, at least, maybe this is the first round. Okay. Notice how I'm counting myself, okay? but it went well for us as well there. And this is something else that we believe in immensely, to the point that we want to go out and speak directly to the retailers. As I said, let's ratchet this back to say where we go. When we launched the 52, it was an exciting launch for all of us. Like I said, it did extraordinarily well. A lot of change, a lot of excitement, a lot of difference going on there. It worked well. But then, as it went on and as it wore on, the wheels on the cart got a little wobbly. The stories got a little lost. We started to make change just for the sake of change, and things lost its way. And you know what I'm saying? Everybody goes to me, you know, didn't you see it happening? And I said, you can see things happen, but how you react and how you fix it is the hardest thing in the world to do. Because we're putting out so many books per month that it just gets away from you. And it's not one thing that's broken, it's a few. And they all start to pile up until you realize the line is off message, off model, and even more importantly, losing audience and losing interest. And I use this story as the way to what happens with Rebirth. Well, we were out doing a convention back in New York in October, New York Comic Con. And we were doing a panel, and Jim and I hadn't done panels for a while, and we were back doing the panels, I never forget. And I had creators from all of our top franchises, Superman, Batman franchises, they were sitting there on this panel talking about their books. And as soon as the panel ended, people got up, and normally they would get up and ask questions about their favorite storyline or their favorite characters. But this time, everybody got up and left the room. Nobody was interested in the stories or characters. You know, and we saw it in the sales numbers, and then we saw it in the room that nobody seemed to care, and I'm sure that's what you were experiencing in your stores. People losing interest in what we were creating. And it was a scary moment, because I always said, you know, if you hear people complain, that's good. If you hear people cheer, that's good. But if people have apathy and lose interest, that's the worst thing in the world. Because they just disappear, and you don't even know it until they're gone, and they're not coming back. And that's a scary moment, because you don't know whether or not the size of your audience is going to be enough to support what you do. And so we had to take a good, long, hard look at our line and say, what do we do to get ourselves back on track? So we spoke to a number of retailers, we spoke to different people, and we started to get an idea. And we realized that all the changes that we were making to the franchises were just so much that people were losing their connection to them. They were losing their identifiability. You know, Batman in a robot suit lasted too long, Superman in jeans didn't win people over. Nothing was feeling comfortable to anybody, and all the changes that we were doing to get people excited were actually turning them off. So ultimately, we sat down and we brought Jeff Johns in, who's been so instrumental in getting the TV shows up and running, and everything in nature of everything going on with our characters, and that's just a deep understanding of every character, and said, how do we get this back on track? So what we did is we sat down and we looked at every book and every franchise, you know, and we went to Comics Pro a couple of months ago, and you know, one of the things that was said to us is that those bottom books we do are just dead before they arrive. You know, why do we even waste your time making them? Nobody wants them. So that convinced us that we doubled down on our better-selling books, spend more energy on the books that people want, more time and put those out. We know it's easier to sell two Batman books than a Batman and a Gotham by Midnight. As much as I love Gotham by Midnight, we know that if you put out Batman twice, there's a better chance for you to have better sales. So now instead of doing Gotham by Midnight as a series, we just do that story inside Batman, where it has a better chance to be found and a better chance to grow an audience. But we put a lot of time and energy into what we're doing here because we understood that your success is our success and our failure is your failure. So ultimately, we have to find a way to work with you and find a way to improve this, and that's why we're here talking these things directly to you. Because here's the most interesting thing we found in all this crazy market research that every company does, everywhere. You know, they give you all these statistics, which mean something to somebody. But the one statistic we heard over and over again is that the store is the single best place for a fan to find out about a comic book. They don't find out online. They don't find out in previews. They find out from you, directly. And if you're not excited about what we do, then you're not going to pass that information to anybody else. So our job today is to get you excited about our comics again. And the way we're doing that is by going back to looks and styles and tonalities that you remember and love. Things that you get excited about with DC Comics, and that excitement will make it over to the fans, and hopefully it turns into a purchase, and we can rebuild what we feel is a wonderful franchise of characters. But we can't do it without you. Simple as that. We can't. We've got to do this together. So everything we're going to be talking about is how can we better service you? How can we give you better product? How can we help you sell your books? And more importantly, how can we excite you about what we're doing again? Rewin your confidence, your faith in us. So therefore, that confidence base will be shared with everybody who enters your store. It's an important time for us right now. You know, I was doing some math, and it was interesting to see, and I don't know how you do it. You get about 400 monthly titles, right? About 400 books every month, periodicals. I don't know if there's enough talent to support that. I don't know if there's enough fans to support that. But that's a lot of things, and you have to determine what the best books are. And our books are an anchor, or should be an anchor in your stores. It's what's familiar. So if everything else seems confusing to everyone, they know where to go where they can know something that they could expect. It's like going to your favorite channel on cable when you go through 500 channels and you just watch that rerun that you love so much. You know, me, I'm watching Columbo with 500 channels and I've seen those episodes about 20 times. Just the way it works. And I want people to feel that way, that they come back to us because they're going to get something they truly enjoy with DC Comics. So we're rebuilding our line to get people comfortable, familiar, and excited about DC again, and a place to go in this crazy morass of books that is out there right now. That's our job right now, and we've got to be better. So we got back to a lot of core principles, we got back to a lot of core ideas, and we're going to take you through all the titles, and hopefully you'll see what we're trying to accomplish. And you know what? We're open to take questions along the way, too. Okay? Let's go.
Here we go, on to Rebirth, the whole point that we showed up for. This was basically kicked off with a short video snippet that showed kind of the redesigned character designs. And then we jumped right into talking about what is Rebirth, what was the point behind Rebirth. And I think the bottom line that I took away, and you can, you know, feel free to add your thoughts too, but what I walked away with was basically Dan and Jim saying the train's off the tracks. Mm-hmm. There's too many people trying to make creative choices. We've been kind of running at a just-in-time pace, and a lot of our titles are, you know, just kind of starting to get away from us. And added into that, we have multiple titles under certain headings. So all of the Lanterns, all of the Supermen, all of the Gotham books, it was too much for them to keep a handle on and keep tight. And then furthermore, they literally said, we're hearing all over from a lot of people that this isn't the DC universe that I know and love. This is something else and I don't enjoy it. So it was very telling when they kind of stood up there and said, this isn't a rebirth, or it is a rebirth. This is not a relaunch. Mm-hmm. This is us saying we know that the history of DC is what people look to when they look at our company and they look at our titles. What the New 52 is not necessarily reflective of our history. There are facets of it and aspects of it that we like and we're going mm-hmm. to keep. There's a lot of it that got away from us and we maybe don't find as appealing as our history. So we're going to brush it aside. We may revisit it later. We may not. We don't know. But what we do know is we need to kind of tighten things down, be a little bit more aware of what we're doing, and find new ways of working. And before we get into the new ways of working, do you feel like that was a pretty fair
recap? Yeah, I think for the most part, the big thing that DiDio said that I have been waiting for a publisher to say for a long time was that a lot of the titles that they released were dead on arrival, and that they have been hearing a lot of feedback that it sounds like they are actually going to respond to. Whether or not it was a critical success, books like Dr. Fate they're not going to last past 12 issues. And right. when they put that out, they should expect that. You know, if you are putting a book out where you're going to go into 95% of the comic book stores that are selling it and have the people doing the ordering tell you, look, I don't think this book will last past 12 issues. Why are you putting the book out?
Right.
And he said, we understand that, and we are responding to people's complaints and observations that we are putting out low-tiered books. We're putting out books like, what was the Batman book that he talked about?
By Midnight.
He said Gotham by Midnight. We're putting out Gotham by Midnight. It's a great book. We love Gotham by Midnight. And he, you know, DiDio is saying we at DC love it. We at the store here, we like Gotham by Midnight too. But the problem is, I think we had two subscribers for the book, and he said, here's the thing. We know that people buy Batman. So why put out Batman and Gotham by Midnight when we can essentially fold Gotham by Midnight into the Batman title?
Right. Spreading yourself too thin.
Yep. And I think they are finally getting the point. You had mentioned the Green Lantern series. Now, DiDio said for a long time that Green Lantern was their second best-selling intellectual property that they had behind Batman, which I remember. I mean, I've been reading comics now for 25 years, and I remember when Green Lantern Rebirth came out, how big it was. To me, it was – people refer to Warren Ellis' authority as widescreen action, which it was. But to me, Green Lantern Rebirth was really the closest thing to – a superhero movie that I have ever read on the printed page. And I loved it. And I read every issue of that. I would buy it from the comic shop, get out to my car, and I would read it in the car in the parking lot. And Rebirth excited me. Rebirth got me to buy Green Lantern. It got me to buy Green Lantern Core. And I read that through the Tomasi and Patrick Gleason era. I actually bought original art of one of the covers from Patrick Gleason. I was such a humongous Green Lantern fan. When they got into Sinestro Core War, I mean, that was one of my favorite DC stories that's ever been told. And then it led into Blackest Night, which was still pretty good. Not quite as good as, you know, Sinestro Core War, but it was so great. But at that time, Green Lantern was ruling the roost. Everybody was reading it. Everybody was talking about it. And now you have some people that read Green Lantern, but it's back to being kind of a C-list book. And what they did was sort of abuse the readership that had grown from everything that started with Rebirth. And people like the Sinestro book, but Sinestro cannot support a regular readership. Either can Red Lanterns, either can, I mean, there's a Larfleeze book out there, cool character, but he should not be getting his own book. So I think they realized and spoke to the fact that they cannot get, that they should not be putting out these D-level books that they know when the first issue goes out, it's going to be a miracle if it lasts to issue
right.
six.
Right.
And so they said, instead of publishing these books that are going to come in at the first issue at number 92 on the Diamond Top 100, let's double the books that come in on the top 10, in the top 20. The Batmans, the Supermans, the Wonder Womans, the Suicide Squads. Let's put those out twice a month, limit our output, and try to give the readers what they want and try to give the retailers what they want, which are good selling books.
Right.
And it sounds like they finally, like I said, I've been waiting years. You know, Marvel right now, God bless them, they're putting out a Star Brand and Nightmask book. Who the hell asked for Star Brand and Nightmask? You know, I mean, we don't have anyone reading it here. There may be stores where they are selling it, but trying to sell an ongoing based on one of the old New Universe books, it's suicide for as far as the series goes. I don't care how big, how good the book is. I don't care how big the creators you put on it are. It's not going to sustain an ongoing series. And DC is finally, I think, recognizing that and making the necessary decision to keep their readership where it needs to be. Don't put these D-level books out as ongoing series because they never last.
Yep. Yeah, and I thought that part of how they're approaching this as well is you have, instead of, you know, six Green Lantern books or six Lantern books, you're going to pare it down to two or three. But I think the more telling thing is the way that they're going about it. The old way was you got your writer and your artist, go off and do your thing. It's up to you on how you're going to kind of tell the story, show the story, whatever. Well, they decided, they took a look at it and they said, you know, this just isn't working. We have too many creative decisions being made and we're going in too many directions all within kind of that same umbrella. So how do we approach that? The thing that was shocking was I thought Geoff Johns, being the CCO, the chief creative officer, had a lot more hands-on during New 52. Doesn't sound like he had as much, because what they were talking about now is with Rebirth, they brought him in to understand the history of the characters and then to look at the roadmap and say, where are we going? But even more to say, where are we going to go over the next quarter? And this really strikes close to me. My main day-to-day job is a software project development manager. So I'm dealing with this new, you know, new to the software development world for the last 10, 15 years of Agile. And one of the things we do is we have a quarterly planning event that plans out the work we're going to do for the next, you know, 16 weeks at the most. And we say, this is what we're delivering at the end. When we get to the end of it, or close to the end, we have another planning event. That's essentially what Geoff Johns is going to be doing. He's going to be taking all of the creative talent for whatever that specific, we'll call it umbrella of a title is, whether it's Gotham, whether it's the Lanterns, whether it's Superman. And they're going to sit down together and they're all going to say, okay, where are we going? And what they're hoping to do now is basically make sure they capture that old, that history, that true DC essence, but then also make sure that even though there may be three or four titles underneath there, in the case of Superman, there's going to be a number of them, how do we keep them flowing in the same direction? There's going to be different characters. There's going to be different actions and rogues and things like that. But how do we keep it tight together? And I think that's phenomenal, because at least you've got everyone coming together to look at where you're taking these characters in a direction. Because if, you know, if Tom King wants to take Batman in one direction, James Tynion the Fourth wants to take him in another, who's to say it's the same Batman? It's going to, it could be confusing, goofy, weird, not feel right. It just seems to make sense.
Yeah, but it's kind of the age old, I guess, question that the comic readers and editors have. It's how do you draw the line between keeping continuity and telling a good story? And you have the people that want to have 100% continuity. Why is so-and-so doing this in this book when he's doing this in another book? You know, why is Wolverine in the Avengers when he's clearly in the X-Men? Why is, in the case of Kurt Busiek's Avengers, why has Kang taken over the entire world and enslaved everyone when in the X-Men everything's hunky-dory? With the New 52, if you want to apply a more recent, I guess, example of that, it would be, why is Brian Hitch being allowed to tell whatever story he wants in his Justice League using Bruce Wayne and whatever characters he wants while Bruce Wayne is dead in Batman? And it comes down to, again, the question of, do we allow a top tier talent like Brian Hitch to tell the story that he wants to tell, or do we shackle him and have him make sure that his story fits into current continuity? And it's a good question, because you're going to, you know, I think most companies these days are going to be geared more towards trade sales, right?
Yep.
And so Watchmen sells a hell of a lot of trades. So does Dark Knight Returns. So does Camelot 3000. You know, Brian Boland wasn't cranking that out on time. But I think with something like Brian Hitch's JLA, yeah, it doesn't fit. It didn't fit necessarily into the New 52 continuity, but was it a good story? Sure, it was good. I guess with Rebirth, we don't have that. You know, we still don't necessarily know. Are they? What is the balance going to be between? We've got a top name that wants to tell this story. We're going to let him do what he wants to do, even if it doesn't necessarily fit in continuity. When the New 52 started, you know, Grant Morrison had just pretty much picked up his Batman run from the pre Flashpoint DC from where he had been going with it anyways. So for the most part, Grant Morrison, his story hardly changed into the New 52. Did that affect the story for the worse? I don't think so. You had people complaining of inconsistencies, but I don't think that necessarily mattered if the story was good. With Rebirth, I'm curious which direction they're going to go in. You know, Brian Hitch is still writing one of the Justice League titles, right? But Tony Daniel is doing the art now. It's not Brian Hitch drawing it. Is Brian Hitch as a writer as strong of a name to let DC let him do his own thing? We're going to have to find out.
Yeah, I mean, I would like to think that these creative geniuses, and they are creative geniuses when you get right down to it, because they can put things on a page that I could never think of. I think what you're going to have now is a voice in the back of the room that's going to say, yeah, that's a really cool story. How can we make it fit with what's going on? Do we set it in the past? Do we set it in the present? Mm-hmm. Do we, you know, and just asking that critical question, because really it's no different than software development. You know, you let the creative minds and the experts do what they're going to do, but sometimes you need to give them parameters, or you need to make them think about something that they might not have thought about before and let them find the solution. They're the creative people.
Sure.
So I think I'm just like you, very interested to see what's going to happen. But I like the idea of keeping things at least in those kind of those umbrellas, those pockets, close. It may not be perfect. Nothing in life is perfect, but at least keep it somewhat understandable. So if you are reading, you know, Dark Knight and Batman or Detective, you're not lost. You're like, well, you're not having that, wait, this is Batman here, this is not Batman here. That shouldn't really be happening without a very clear understanding of, well, this is taking place previously, this is, you know, it's very disenfranchising to readers when they're not getting what they're expecting.
Yeah, it's the old the line that Alan Moore used in Whatever Happened to the Man of Tomorrow, where he said, the following is an imaginary story, but aren't they all?
Right.
You know, and you can get upset over continuity differences, and plenty of people will, but at the end of the day, I think if you enjoy reading the comic, who cares?
Yeah, sure, there's that. Yeah, there's that.
So, but, well, either way, I think with Rebirth, everyone would like to have a unified vision, mm-hmm. but I think more than anything else, people would just like to have good
stories. Tell me a good story.
And it sounds like what they're doing, we kind of broached this a little bit earlier. I've been reading comics longer than you have. My kind of frame of reference to a lot of these things is a little bit bigger than yours. the first thing I thought of, and I think that this is interesting to compare and contrast what someone who's been reading comics for a while versus someone who's relatively newer to it in the grand scheme of things thinks. When I heard what he was, what DiDio was saying about, we're going to, this isn't a reboot, but we're going to find a way to, you know, integrate the New 52 into the pre-Flashpoint universe. The first thing that I thought of was Crisis on Infinite Earths, which was not necessarily a reboot, but it certainly rebooted the entire DC line. But it did it in continuity. You had everything that happened in Crisis on Infinite Earths. It still happened. The Anti-Monitor went back and, you know, changed history, et cetera, et cetera. But it was all part of the story. So all that stuff was in continuity, and that's what allowed a lot of those really cool story beats to come back. And, you know, in Infinite Crisis, which I actually was a huge fan of. I think it sounds like what Rebirth is going to be, more than anything, is something closer akin to Crisis on Infinite Earths, where they're going to say everything in the New 52 happened, but here's this event that's going to merge it with the pre-Flashpoint DC.
Right.
And we're going to take the best things about the New 52 DC, the stuff that was critically received, better than anything else, and this, we're going to kind of jettison that which everyone hated. And, you know, Superman in jeans, of course, was a big part of that. And I think that it's going to, I still think it'll be in continuity, but I think it will be closer to Crisis on Infinite Earths than it is to something like Marvel's Ultimate line, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I hope that they do that because I don't want them to, I'll admit it, I was not a huge New 52 fan. Even though I have a comic store, for me, I read less DC titles after the New 52 started than I did before. I wanted my Booster Gold titles. You know, I wanted those kind of fun DC books, and I didn't get as many of them. I'm an old DC reader. I love reading, like I said, Booster Gold and the old Justice League International and things like that. There were some books that catered to that. Justice League 3000 was pretty good. But it was another one of those kind of bottom tier titles that wasn't destined to last, you know?
Yep.
So I'm glad that they're going to merge the best part of the New 52. Obviously, Batman, the top selling DC book.
Right.
We talked about the Court of Owls, how that's going to be integrated into the main DCU.
Yep. Sounds like Mech Bat won't.
But you know what? They acknowledge that.
Right.
Now we saw, again, here's two perspectives on it. From a story level, we saw interest in Batman wane when, no pun intended, with the introduction of the Mech Bat.
Right. When Bruce Wayne's not Batman.
Yeah.
You saw what happens.
Right. And
well, we saw what happens.
Wasn't necessarily that people just don't like the book without Bruce Wayne as Batman. I think, you know, Dick Grayson probably could have been a fine fill-in, but people had no interest in where the story was going.
Yep.
And we had people drop the book. Our sales, the natural sales off the shelf fell.
Yep.
And it carried over into them bringing Bruce Wayne back. It carried over into the Bloom storyline. It carried over into what came after that. So I think, you know, DiDio talked about that though, too. Mm-hmm. He mentioned that being, when he was talking about the line of New 52 failures, essentially, Mech Bat was one of the big things he talked about.
Yep.
Now, Scott Snyder's sells books. There's no doubt about
it. Greg Capullo's art, obviously top notch.
Right.
I mean, they were not downplaying that at all. They were just simply stating readers didn't like Mech Bat, mm-hmm. and that came back to their whole legacy, their history. The readers didn't like this new creative direction that was being taken. Now, not every direction that a creative team takes, the readers are going to like. But this was one that apparently resonated loud and clear enough that, okay, we understand this is one of those mm-hmm. one of those times, one of those characters. Maybe this wasn't the right thing.
And honestly, I don't think that was really, I mean, it was only for what, 4 issues, if that? It wasn't 5 issues, 6 issues?
Five or six, okay. Maybe, I don't know.
But it wasn't, you look at what happened in the 90s. I loved Nightfall, Night Quest, Night Search, Night's End. I thought the whole storyline was great. I mean, I was like 10 when the whole story started, but I loved it. I thought as the whole Azrael thing was good. But even as like a 10 or 11 year old, I knew it was not going to last. So I stuck with the story. I think it was like Legends of the Dark Knight 64 or 63 or something like that, where Bruce Wayne finally comes back and he fights Azrael in the Batcave, you know, and reclaims the mantle of the Bat. I loved the whole story. It was a much longer story than the Mech Bat story was, and I had the patience back then. Now I think people just seem to have a lot less patience, because two issues into the Mech Bat stuff, we had people dropping the book, and it's everybody had to know that Bruce Wayne is going to come. He showed up at the end of the issue after he supposedly died. You know, I mean,
so as a subscriber to the Batman title, mm-hmm. as a reader of it, I don't know as if I knew Bruce was going to come back. Right. I think everyone that got the title, well, I'm not going to generalize and say everyone. I think the lion's share of people that get the title knew that Bruce was going to come back. That was inevitable. But the story itself just wasn't very compelling. It just wasn't right. It just didn't feel right. Jim Gordon as a mech bat, having a mech bat, I mean, all of that, it just didn't feel like something that fit at all. And I think that's what was the turnoff of it. I don't think it was the fact that Bruce Wayne was not the Batman. We've seen that before. You talked about it. Dick Grayson was Batman. We've seen that before. So that wasn't a shocker. That wasn't a change. It was who was in the suit and how he was acting within the suit. I think that was really the problem. And for me, I read through it. I plowed through it. I didn't really like it, but like you said, we knew Bruce was coming back, so you stick with it. You read the storyline out, because you never know what nuggets you're going to get. And maybe there is a small facet of people being less patient now, but I would argue that there's two reasons for that. And I would say that one of them isn't so much the fact that the younger crowd that we could generalize, millennials or whatever, tend to be more impatient, because there's just as many adults reading the title as there are younger folks. I think what we could maybe say was something along the lines that it just wasn't compelling, period.
Sure. No, I agree with
that. It didn't carry you forward. Were you subscribed to Batman? Were you reading
No.
it?
No. I wasn't. But
you dropped off before Mech Bat, so that's not a big...
No, I did. I thought... Again, I read it as it came out, and I thought it was entertaining enough, but it didn't grip me. I will, full disclosure, I like the Snyder run, but I don't put it in my, you know, top 10 Batman runs. And I know for a lot of people these days, it's sacrilege. I think for a lot of people, though, there's a lot of folks that came in and started with the New 52 Batman. And so a phenomenal run, no doubt about it. But I think that there's always, you know, I've read better. But, you know, God knows Snyder's a good writer.
Yeah.
I get, anyways, not to get off topic, but I think DiDio, he realized, as we talked about, that there were a lot of missteps in all avenues. Even their top selling book had sort of a fatal flaw that cost them a lot of readers.
Yep.
And it sounds like, looking at a lot of the approaches that they're taking to the Rebirth books, that they're sort of doing two things. They're mixing, the best example of this that I can think of is Green Arrow, where they said that they sort of, I don't know if they said they took a poll, but they sort of asked around and they got people's interpretations of what in your mind is Green Arrow? What is most memorable about that? And they said that all of the things that I was thinking, that Mike Grell run with the goatee, with the hood, the relationship with Black Canary, all that stuff that was in the 80s and the early 90s, that when I started reading Green Arrow, and, you know, I mean, Mike Grell, he was a phenomenal writer. He was a fantastic artist on the book. And that was one of the first DCU books. It wasn't a Vertigo book. It was a DCU book to have a mature readers label on it, because it dealt with some heavy stuff. It wasn't just a TNA book. It was a book that dealt with heavy relationship issues. you know, issues of death and dying and a lot of things that you didn't normally get, a lot of weight that you didn't get from a normal comic. And so all those things that a lot of people associate with Green Arrow, him sort of being a, you know, smart ass social justice warrior, which started with the old hard traveling heroes, Danny O'Neill, Neil Adams run of Green Lantern, Green Arrow. That's what people associate with it. However, you also have an entire generation that knows Green Arrow solely from the TV show Arrow.
Right.
And so it sounds like the Green Arrow book that's going to be coming out in Rebirth is melding
all
the big
that.
Things that you and I remember yep. of Green Arrow that we think about, which is that Mike Grell era stuff.
Or even the Kevin Smith.
Sure. You know, and I'll be honest, I am not a big Kevin Smith fan at all. Can't really stand most of his movies. I loved his run on Green Arrow. I loved it. I thought it was great. Quiver was captivating to me when it first came out. And I go back and reread it every couple of years. I wish he would go back and I wish his Batman stuff was that well written.
So what they're looking at doing is taking kind of the Mike Grell look
mm-hmm.
and kind of some of that history, like you said, with Black Canary. But then also, I think they were talking about pacing it similar to the Arrow show
sure.
and kind of using some of the same plot delivery. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of interesting, an interesting way of looking at it. Do we want to get into the individual titles or do we want to start at Rebirth first?
I think we can just finish off Green Arrow and
all right,
skip
finish
it
off
when
Green
we get
Arrow.
To it. But, you know, DiDio himself even said and Jim Lee kind of mentioned this too, that the Green Arrow that people like is the Green Arrow who, regardless of your politics, this is what you associate with Green Arrow. He's kind of a liberal a-hole, you know, and he's that social justice warrior, which is why he contrasts so well with Hal Jordan, who's supposed to be kind of a good old boy, not a good old boy like Deliverance, but he's supposed to be like a down-home conservative, you know. And so the two of them were of a great contrast on the road, and when they teamed up in that classic run, you got a lot of social issues that came out of it. I think they're going to go for that again and give them the goatee, but I think that, like you said, they're going to have kind of the pacing of the show, probably more of the issues that the show deals with. And I think that that is the perfect example to tie this all up in a bow of what Rebirth sounds like. Taking the stuff that people love the most about these characters, if you were to ask, you know, 1,000 people, what do you think about so-and-so character? And then updating that to be relevant today. I think that's what Rebirth is all about. It's not the New 52, I guess, outlook of making them kind of grim and gritty. New 52, to me, felt, a lot of the titles, felt like the DC universe through the, like, 1992 Image lens, you know? And let's get a lot of the, you know, hot artists that can tell stories about, I mean, look at Red Hood, you know, it was kind of a lot of TNA and violence and stuff. And to me, it felt too early 90s.
And sometimes it just felt forced.
It did. It certainly did. I think Rebirth is kind of jettisoning that and going with, again, to cap it, what people are expecting with these characters that have been around for 70 years that they love, and how can we also make them relevant for new readers or readers that did jump on in the New 52 without abandoning them?
Right. So Rebirth.
Rebirth.
Rebirth number one comes in May. The one thing that right off the bat that Dan talked about was the first line in Rebirth that says, "I love this world, but there's something missing." So this 80-page special is really, it's telling us where we've been, a little bit of where we're going, and what's happening to get us there. And it's kind of meant to launch us into these other titles. Now, that's not to say that all you need to do is read Rebirth and then jump into the number one of your new title, if it's a number one or an ongoing or a, you know, legacy numbering. There's also going to be a Rebirth number one for like a Batman Rebirth number one to kind of help add a little more detail. So this 80-page special is really kind of the big picture view of where we're going. And I think they talked about this kind of maps the course for the next 2 to 4 years of where they're taking the line. it's a broad range, 2 to 4 years, but
yeah, the story right now is that they have that each title has a story plotted for the next 2 years,
right?
Or actually, for the next 24 issues, because it's shipping twice. Most of the books are twice monthly.
17 twice monthly, 15 once monthly books.
Yeah. So I think I don't think it's going to be that'll mean it's a 24 issue arc. They even mentioned this.
No,
it's not going to be a 24 issue arc that's collected over, you know, four trades. It just means that they're going into the next year with a vision of what they want these series to be.
Yep.
And it's not going to be kind of struggling to come up with, I mean, you look at, you know, I hate to say it, we talked in the last podcast that we did about how excited I am about Aquaman, which we'll get to. But you look at the last couple of years of Aquaman and how that just kind of jumped from vision to vision. Nobody had really any idea how they wanted to go forward with Aquaman. Editorial obviously didn't have much of a vision for it. I think it's smart for them to have 24 issues of ideas in the bag, what they want to do with the titles and the characters. And again, that doesn't mean that it's going to be a Batman Eternal style weekly book, but.
Right. Yeah. Right. And I think that some of the things that we talked about in that first Rebirth discussion were, you know, like we said, something's missing. So how are we going to get that back? They highlighted the artists that they're going to have, you know, some of their big top name artists that they've had over the past 2-3 decades. And then on top of it, they made sure to call out right away when they were talking about, okay, Rebirth is going to launch us into these twice monthly titles. DiDio called out right away. He said, you know what? We've had issues getting books on the shelves. Sometimes it's been 5 weeks, sometimes 6 weeks, sometimes 7 weeks. And he said, so you're probably all asking, how the heck are you going to do twice monthly?
Well, and the best example of that he had was he talked about how they were embarrassed that they had a movie in March that came out called Dawn of Justice, and they did not release a Justice League book in March.
Right.
And he said that, you know, that's on us. I think he may have even said, I'm sure we'll pull the audio, that we were ashamed of not releasing a book, that was our fault. We screwed up. You know, he was about as humble as you can be about that entire situation.
But then he made sure to say, we have confidence in this twice monthly because we've been doing weekly series since 2006, and not once has there been a late book on a weekly series.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't have the numbers to verify that there hasn't been a delay. There could have been through Diamond or through the printer, but it sounded, at least from the creative side, getting it in on deadlines, it was there. Now, that doesn't mean that they're amazing.
The best weekly book ever, 52, shipped on time every week.
Right. So he really hung his hat on that, and rightly so. I mean, that's definitely a feather in the cap. And one thing, like we talked about, is the way that they're doing this new kind of creative hub with each of these different pockets of the characters. They basically put it on the creators and said, you're going to be twice monthly. You need to figure out how.
Basically a point for the line and a direction for the line, which I think is very just about continuity, about how all the stories fit together. It's about consistency in the character's behavior from book to book. It's so important that if Wonder Woman appears in one book, she should act and behave the same way in another book. Everybody has to understand what's at the core of the character, what makes them work, how they talk, how they act, and reinforce that from every appearance, because I think that's what really builds the universe out, and that's something that we are very much staying on top of to make sure there's a level of consistency for the character's behaviors from title to title.
Okay, before we get into Superman.
So we have the list here for those who are not 100% up on exactly what DC will be putting out. There's a couple of different style books you're going to be putting out between the twice monthly and the monthly. There's going to be the DC Universe Rebirth number one that comes out, I believe it's May 25th. It's the 80-page book that we kind of talk about. Then you're going to have the twice a month titles that will have a Rebirth number one shot. And those titles are Aquaman, Batman, Flash, Green Arrow, Green Lanterns, Superman, Wonder Woman, Nightwing, Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps, Cyborg, Justice League, Suicide Squad, and Deathstroke. Then we're going to have twice a month issues that don't get a Rebirth number one. Action Detective, which are, of course, reverting back to their original numbering. Then there's twice-a-month titles that will not get a Rebirth number one that are starting at a number one, which are Justice League of America and Harley Quinn. And then there are monthly titles that will get a Rebirth number one, and those are Titans, Batgirl and Birds of Prey, Red Hood and the Outlaws, Blue Beetle, Supergirl, and Batman Beyond, and Teen Titans. And again, those are monthly titles, not twice a month. And then there are the monthly titles that will not get a Rebirth one-shot, and those are Batgirl, New Superman, Superwoman, Super Sons, and Trinity. So good luck memorizing all of that, but just be aware that DC has all sorts of plans for twice a week books and monthly books and monthly books that get a one shot, twice a week books that get a, or twice a month books that get a one shot, and et cetera, et cetera. Don't expect it to be extremely clear cut. You may want to get one of these lists. And
if you have questions, send them to podcast@cowabungacomics.com and we will be sure to answer them. We do have a one pager here that, we may just be able to scan in and put out, but,
Or write it down, and every time you're at a red light, spend a little time memorizing it.
There you go. Or, even better than that, just make sure you pick up previews every month.
There you go. That's or just subscribe to every DC book through us.
That'll work too. That's probably your easiest yet. We'll make sure you have everything. So with that said, let's jump in. We'll start going through these titles. We've got quite a number of them. We may only spend 30 seconds to a minute on each one, just kind of call out anything that was really a highlight. And so with that, we'll be Superman first. And I thought that one of the interesting things, so I've been in comics now for 7 years, something like that, really heavily. Kind of in them a little bit before that, but really consciously heavily in it for about 7 years. And in those 7 years, Superman has never appealed to me, ever. And I was predominantly a DC guy, so that's kind of crazy. But one thing that DiDio said, which is interesting to me, is he said, if Superman isn't our best title, if Superman's not the flagship of our franchise, then we're not doing things right.
And then, by the way, you just need to read more Grant Morrison Superman, but go ahead.
I'll make sure to chronicle that as we're going through this podcast over time. But yeah, so I thought that that was really interesting. You know, DiDio called back the things that he said with New 52, the blue jeans, that really just didn't seem to go over very well. Again, disparate plot lines and him going being directions.
Kind of a
brooding prick.
Yeah, he was a brooding millennial. And, I, you know, millennial doesn't always have to be a pejorative. But I think in this case, they turned it into one because they made the Superman character, they almost turned into a dating show. You mm-hmm. know, who's he dating? Who's he in a relationship with? And it's just, the whole thing got, it just got old to me.
Which is interesting because those were, you know, that was kind of the main line. And then you had this little offshoot that's, I think, just wrapping up or has just wrapped up. I can't remember off the top of my head. Superman American Alien, which has just been fantastic. It's been a wonderful journey through kind of his history, growing in different ages and things like mm-hmm. that. Not at all connected to what's happening in the New 52 run, per se, but yet that's the strongest creative title for me.
Which is sad. So. I mean, even Morrison, when the New 52 started writing Action, I didn't like his Superman, and I'm a Grant Morrison diehard. I think Grant Morrison's Superman in... I mean, All-Star Superman, of course, is great, but his Superman in the 90s Justice League run that he did, which I think is the best Justice League run ever, was written as an icon, you know, and I think the reason that Morrison wrote him so well was because he is this icon that at the time you had Wally West and Kyle Rayner and these guys that were first timers in the Justice League with these guys who are, you know, essentially gods, in their watchtower on the moon looking over mankind. And Superman was the godliest of all of these gods. And I think that it was just something that he did incredibly well with the character. So trying to take that same character and tone him down into sort of a angsty millennial, just, it did not work. You know, that was not what I was hoping for. And I know that with Action, he was sort of going back to the 1938, 39, 40 version of Superman where he jumped around and beat up wife beaters and was sort of a kind of a prick to people, but it just didn't, it did not work. Yep. in the grand scheme of the DC universe. It didn't do it for me.
So the new creative plan for Superman is basically kind of reverting back to a more classic looking costume. Mm-hmm. And then we basically got a preview into Superman 957, which is Lex versus Superman. Mm-hmm. So we'll see where that goes. I do think that a lot of creative energy is going to be put behind this Superman umbrella, again, for lack of a better term. They really want Superman to be the forefront of the franchise, which will be interesting because Batman has really kind of carried them from the, you know, at the front as far as sales. And arguably, as far as notoriety, you look at the, you know, the Batman trilogy, the Dark Knight trilogy that was out, and then you look at Batman v Superman. So he's definitely playing a major component of it. So,
well, even look who got top billing in that movie. Man of Steel was the last movie that came out, but he still got top billing. Also, I think it's worth noting that this is going to be the first time in a very long time that there will be more, and DiDio mentioned this, that there will be more titles in the Superman line than there will be in any other line that they are that they are putting out. So, including Batman, they're obviously putting a lot of stock into Superman, and I mean, we'll see what happens. Yep. But it's not just Superman. There's going to be, we've already talked about Superwoman. There's going to be
Super
the new
kids, or Super Sons, excuse
Super
me.
Sons, which will be Damian Wayne and whatever Superman's kid's name is, can't remember.
No, I can't get off the top of my head.
You're going to have the Chinese Superman, which will be New Superman, which actually, I'll tell you, that sounded interesting the way that they described it, where he is sort of a bully. It's a guy who, I think DiDio
called him Brash.
Yeah, they mentioned that it'll start out saying something like it'll show somebody getting kind of picked on or something, and it'll say something like, you know, there's always a bully around here or something, and then the picture will kind of pull away a little bit, and it'll say like, and I'm the bully, and you know, this is the main guy, sort of an arrogant character.
Yeah, they said they were going to kind of harken back to the Golden Age. Brash and slightly more abrupt style.
Which could work.
With a whole new rogues gallery.
Yeah.
A whole new set of, obviously, Asian villains.
Yeah, and Superwoman, of course, is Lois Lane. Action, like we said, is going to go back to the original numbering.
Yep, Lex versus Superman.
So that'll be kind of cool.
And then Super Sons, they didn't really give us much about that. They wouldn't even tell us the creative team.
No, but DiDio said that will be his, he said that's his favorite book out of the entire Rebirth line. So we'll, you know, for whatever that's worth.
We'll wait on bated breath.
Yeah.
So Batman. Batman is going to be taken over by Tom King. He's taking over the main title from Scott Snyder. Scott Snyder will be doing All-Star Batman. For those of you that really are caring, All-Star Batman will be $4.99. And the first issue of that will come in August.
And that will be monthly.
Yes.
Not twice a month, as was previously reported.
And the first story will be Two-Face and Batman on a road trip. The rogues within that All-Star Batman will connect to all of the other Batman titles, and they are going to reinvent the rogues gallery. So that's all the Scott Snyder All-Star Batman. Batman itself, the mainline title, I was kind of having some questions in my mind as to what was going on. Scott Snyder and then James Tynion, also on the Detective Comics, are known for drawing out the storyline, longer arcs, things like that. So I was kind of curious, is Batman going to go in that same vein? And the first thing out of, I think it was Jim or one of the two mouths, the first thing they said was this is going to be a faster-paced book.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe still like a 6-issue to 12-issue arc type thing, but a faster pace in general. They're going to be adding in new facets to the storyline, new areas, potentially new rogues. Obviously, the first new rogue being the new antagonist, Gotham. So that's going to be really, really good, I think. And it sounds like the intent with Tom King is to make this Batman title, again, faster pace and slightly more, a little easier for folks to get into. So I don't know. I think they're talking about taking some of the past, some of the history of Batman that people kind of know, not necessarily having read the comics, but just knowing. One thing a lot of reviews talk about with Batman v Superman is yet another retelling of the death of, you know, Bruce's parents. People know that his parents are dead, so we're going to play off of key things like that and get going. So we'll see. Hopefully that holds true.
You know, one of the big questions that DiDio got at the Q&A was by another retailer who had asked, when am I going to start being able to sell Batman to kids again? The Capullo stuff, Snyder and Capullo stuff, while good, certainly in Endgame, it was a dark book. Yep. You know, I mean, there was some violent stuff in there. And I think that's certainly something that it seemed like they had taken into account. I don't think that it's necessarily going to turn into a G-rated all-ages book that'll be on the children's shelves, but it sounded from their response like it's going to be a little bit more toned down. It's not going to be quite as violent as the Snyder Capullo Batman. Is that what you kind of read into
it? Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, then obviously in the Gotham verse, we have Batgirl with Birds of Prey. Bringing back Oracle and a more classic feel. So that'll be interesting.
Nightwing.
That's one I'm looking forward to. So this is coming straight out of Robin War, beholden to the Court of Owls. And this is Dick Grayson attempting to be retrained by someone else. And the way that they kind of talked about this was Dick has always been kind of the master pupil, the master person who relied on a mentor to mm-hmm. be what he is. So who could change him to be something different? Well, another mentor, but this one isn't so altruistic and virtuous. This is more of a dark.
Yeah. The point was kind of that Nightwing didn't really have a rogues gallery. Whereas, yep. You know, Batman arguably has the best rogues gallery comic books. Nightwing, he kind of had a bunch of also-rans or Batman villains. And so they wanted to create and introduce someone who could be Nightwing's archenemy. So basically an anti-Batman, kind of an evil version of Batman that would be perfect for Dick Grayson to kind of go up against, to play off of. So I think that's kind of a neat idea, and Tim Seeley will be writing the book.
Yes.
We love Tim Seeley. We love Revival. It's both of ours.
Non-DC plug. Our top five. Get Revival.
Oh, yeah, for sure. So Nightwing sounds pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
One book that I am – well, there's two books that I'm really interested in. Deathstroke is one, solely because of the writer. They got Christopher Priest back, also known to old readers as Jim Owsley. Changed his name. Chris Priest worked on what I thought was the best run of Black Panther ever, the 90s run. He wrote, I mean, I think 70-some issues of it. He also wrote Quantum and Woody, the original Valiant run, which is a phenomenal book. Priest is he's just a great writer, and I think anything that he does deserves to be read. So him writing a villain like Deathstroke, I'm very excited for. He does such a good job at fleshing out a supporting cast. I know in Civil War, I haven't seen it yet because at the time of us recording this, it hasn't been released. But Everett K. Ross is going to be in Civil War. He's a character that Priest created in his Black Panther run. And it sounds like he's going to be played by Martin Freeman. So there's another character that, you know, just kind of a sideline character that Chris Priest created, who is going to end up in the new movie, the new Captain America, played by Martin Freeman. He's just such a great writer for creating a fully fleshed out cast. And so I'm very excited to see what he can do with Deathstroke. The other book that I had mentioned before was Aquaman. And I said, I'm excited about it because I knew Dan Abnett's history with writing the Warhammer books. And knowing that Dan Abnett has a really good grasp on sci-fi and fantasy, I was excited to see what he could do with a book like Aquaman. And I had mentioned that some of my favorite Aquaman stuff is the Kurt Busiek run, phenomenal, when he is kind of, when it's written and portrayed as sort of an underwater fantasy series.
Now, DiDio called it Game of Thrones underwater.
Yeah, so when we were there, and I love Brad Walker's art too, so when we were at the roadshow and DiDio said that it was Game of Thrones underwater, I was like, well, now I'm totally sold. I mean, I was already sold on it before, but I think Aquaman is going to be the book that anyone who's a fantasy fan and a DC fan should jump in on and try that out, because Abnett, he's got a great grasp of fantasy and writing that sort of hard sci-fi fantasy realm. And I think that he'll do a phenomenal job creating sort of an expanded universe for a character like Aquaman.
This is one of those ones, too, where they said, we're going back pre-New 52. They didn't even really make mention of the New 52 mm-hmm. stuff at all, which you alluded to, saying it was kind of all over here or there after the first, 10 to 12 issues, it kind of got a little...
Well, after Geoff Johns left. There really wasn't a unified vision. So, again, with Aquaman, you had a lot of good, even pre-Flashpoint, a lot of cool series that came out. Going back to the 90s, you had Peter David when Aquaman was reinvented, where he lost his hand. It was like fed to piranhas, and he had the hook, and he had the long hair and the armor. And that was the Aquaman that was in Grant Morrison's JLA. So I think maybe that's a big part of me really appreciating that version of Aquaman was more due to Grant Morrison. But either way, after that, you had Kurt Busiek's run on the character, which was great. You had Will Pfeiffer's run where he did I hope I'm right, but I think he did the Sub Diego run, where a certain part of like San Diego went underwater and people mutated and kind of ended up having to be part of Aquaman's kingdom. There were a lot of neat runs. The biggest problem that I always see with Aquaman are the stories where he has to go out of the water and do something. You know, on land, he should be a guy who is, he has so many story opportunities beneath the waves that it should be a high fantasy epic. You know, you don't need him fighting Metallo at a World's Fair or something like that. He's Aquaman. make him the character that with the supporting cast and villains that he deserves to have. And I think that Dan Abnett is the guy to do it.
Ladies and gentlemen, Professor Bula.
Thank you.
The Aquaman scholar.
Not quite. I actually prefer Namor. What does that tell you?
Well,
come on.
So for me, the book that I called out before, Wonder Woman, by Greg Rucka, as we talked about previously, this is a case where there's going to be two storylines running parallel with one another, one in kind of current time and one in past time. And this was a direct piece of the puzzle, basically saying, okay, you creative team, this is kind of your construct to stay within. How do you solve it? And Greg, I think if I heard right, Greg's got the first, not just, you know, year, but the first 2 years, literally the first 2 years of this book mapped out, which is pretty amazing. I'm looking very forward to it, but the prospect of having to wait 2 years for another non-DC plug, another issue of Black Magic is going to kill me. I'm not too sure what's going to do for Lazarus, but I know Black Magic's getting put on the shelf.
Too bad.
Yeah.
No, it sounds, I mean, everything that I saw about it sounds pretty good. Liam Sharp, great artist, no doubt about it.
And then Nicola Scott.
Yep. Who is, I mean, she's the, that's the Black Magic artist, right?
Black Magic artist. So she's been all over the DCU. But she's kind of reinvented a personal, I guess not reinvented, but she's found her personal style of art that she likes through Black Magic, and that's what she's going to be bringing to Wonder Woman. Which, again, Wonder Woman is one of those titles where in the New 52 it was kind of a little bit of a downer for them. And you have the Legends of Wonder Woman, which is a digital-first comic that's been coming out that... Again, just similar to Superman American Alien, not part of the core line, probably the best written book out there. I mean, it's been a very, very good read.
Yeah, and what happened from the Batman vs. Superman movie was we got a lot of people in here, mothers bringing their children in asking for Wonder Woman.
Yep.
And it's kind of hard to hand a mother with a 10-year-old girl the Azzarello New 52 run of Wonder Woman. It is more of an adult book.
Yep.
I mean, it's not, again, not labeled a mature reader's book, but I don't know. I think Rucka's stuff was always very good, and I want that middle ground where you can hand it to a longtime reader and have them appreciate it, and then hand it to
a brand new,
that 12-year-old girl that just came in that thinks Wonder Woman is the coolest character ever and wants to start reading Wonder Woman. You know, I think I'm hoping that that's what that middle ground will be with the Rebirth Wonder Woman.
I agree. Where do we want to go next?
Wherever you want to go.
Whew. Flash. So the Speed Force is going to be flying through. It's going to hit a serial killer and other folks. So there's going to be multiple people that get the Speed Force, one of them being a serial killer, but no one can really measure up to the Flash. There's going to be all these speedsters running around all over the place, and basically Flash has to corral all this. It sounds very chaotic, but sounds interesting. This was another one of those books where they kind of brought in the TV show and said, you know, this is really brought in a different demographic or different group of people with interest to the character that's not necessarily being reflected in book sales because the book's not being written at a pace, at a style with which these folks can consume it and enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be interesting to see how they manage to do that. They did talk about as well bringing in some discussion or facets, and I don't know where along in the storyline it is, to Flashpoint.
Mm-hmm.
Not like he's a major key to that.
No, I really don't have much to add with Flash, but I know where you want to jump into.
Oh, boy.
It should be the Green Lantern series.
Oh, geez. So Green Lantern, we're going to be slimming it down from a number of different storylines. We're going to kind of, again, this is one of those things where DiDio said, we've just got too many creative directions going on. We're not really hearkening back to our true roots, our true actual DC roots of Green Lantern. And what we're going to be kind of doing is we've got the Green Lanterns as one title, and we've got Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps as the other key titles. So the Green Lanterns are going to be Jessica Cruz and Simon Baz. And this one, the folks up front, Jim and Dan, literally said that this is going to be a hot book. What that means, I guess I'm not 100% sure, but the first one's going to be a hot issue. It's going to be trying to undilute the brand. That was their term. They were diluting the brand right now, so they're going to undilute the brand, and they're going to reinforce what the Green Lanterns are, what a Green Lantern means, and just don't take away from that. So that's going to be the new Green Lantern title going forward. And then with Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps, this is kind of going to be that Kyle Rayner, John Stewart, and Hal Jordan, kind of the for those DC fans, you know, that those are the key Green Lanterns to them. Mm-hmm. This is really going to speak back to them. Again, going back to the roots, take it back to where it all started from.
Yeah, I think that is probably a good book to lead into Justice League, which again will be written by Brian Hitch. But there are going to be two Green Lanterns in Justice League, and it's going to be Simon Baz and Jessica Cruz, in addition to the normal core Justice Leaguers. So it'll be interesting to see what they do running those two characters who are going to be completely new to the Justice League. Hal Jordan will not be in the JLA. He's going to be off running the Green Lantern Corps. Yep. And they're going to have these two kind of newer Green Lanterns of our, whatever this sector we are, it was a 2814. But kind of cool to see how that works. And I don't know very much about Simon Baz or Jessica Cruz, so it'll be neat to see how they kind of play and play with the others. And do they, you know, get along with Flash and Batman, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. So for those of you that are Green Lantern fans, that's what you can look forward to. Should we maybe get into some of the team-up books?
Yeah, why don't you go ahead?
All right, so let's start off with Titans. This is basically going to, well, they said, move back to where people feel familiar. There's going to be some major storylines moving forward out of Rebirth 1 for Titans. So that's going to be kind of a jumping on point. So make sure if you're going to be reading the Titans title that you read Rebirth 1. Although
that,
I would say,
and I believe they said Justice League 52
yep.
will be a pretty big tie-in to the new Titans series as well.
Yep. So that's Titans. Now we got Teen Titans. This is going to be a September title, and we were told directly that the September and October books are going to be spinning out of books that are coming between May and September. And this is something that DC also talked about, was this phased rollout approach where they were going to be having, you know, their core titles are going to be running, but then the team-up books and the ancillary titles still totaling less than 52, which is what they went off with the new 52 with. So they're going to have less titles, but they're going to spin off of one another instead of all just starting with this big bang, 52 number ones, and away we go. So Teen Titans is going to be one that spins off of some items that are going to be coming before it. And this is going to be Damian becoming the leader of the Teen Titans.
Mm-hmm.
So Titans title is going to take our, the new Teen Titans, basically, and aging them up to more of the college age. And Teen Titans are going to be kind of that new crop of folks led by Damian that are going to be stepping into that.
Yep.
Did I miss anything?
No. I have nothing to add to that one.
Good.
Tell you what I'm excited about is Blue Beetle, which they're bringing Ted Kord back. I think that's the real big news. I'm sure just about everybody's heard that by now. Ted Kord is going to be kind of stepping into the mentor role to Jaime Reyes. So it's kind of going to be like the Batman Beyond, where Bruce Wayne sort of ushered in Terry McGinnis. And I think that they, you know, the Countdown one shot, when it, I remember when that came out, it was a huge book. And there were a lot of people at that point who had forgotten or never took Blue Beetle seriously. I mean, what most people knew him as was the Giffen DeMatteis early Justice League International, you know, Justice League reboot stuff with Guy Gardner and Booster Gold, where it was sort of the laugh a minute stuff. I was always a big fan of the character, and Countdown kind of turned him into a serious investigative character who gets killed at the end of the Countdown one shot. So they bring Blue Beetle back to everyone's attention, and then they kill him off. And I was always a big Blue Beetle fan. I love Justice League. I read all the Blue Beetle stuff that was coming out in the late 80s, and I was a big fan of the character, and so I liked Jaime Reyes just fine. I didn't think he was bad, but he was no Ted Kord, and I'm glad that Ted Kord will be back, at least kind of mentoring him.
Training, yeah.
So hopefully that will lead to an inevitable Blue and Gold team up with Booster Gold, who I'm also a big fan of.
Suicide Squad.
Oh, yeah.
They said Harley's going to be coming back in a more traditional style. How traditional, I don't think we ever really got full definition on. But they're saying more traditional style. And the big teaser was characters could die.
Yep. Art by Jim Lee.
Who's that?
Nobody we've ever heard of.
No.
And? Do you remember who...
It's 12:20 in the morning. I don't know who I am at this point.
Jim Lee's switching off with somebody else. But Jim Lee was talking about how, you know, this is going to be one of their bigger flagship books. We're going to find out. But it's going to be one of their bigger flagship books. I don't think it's any coincidence that it's going to be launching around the time that the movie comes out. You know, having Jim Lee on art, having Jim Lee on a lot of the character redesign seems to kind of be a smart move. Anything?
Yeah, I'm trying to find it.
Is it Brett Booth?
I think so. Let's go with Brett Booth for now, and all of our friends listening can correct us if we're wrong.
They can. We're going to find out, though. We'll correct ourselves. It's, you know, we have been, you know, imbibing this entire time.
Well, and not to mention, this was a 3-hour discussion
from last week.
Yeah, from last week. So
we can tell you how much fun we had with talking to Jim Lee. I mean,
let's talk about that. We're almost done with the rest of these, then we can get into that. So we talked about All-Star Batman, Blue Beetle, Deathstroke, Harley, Suicide Squad, Supergirl, Red Hood and the Outlaws. So Red Hood and the Outlaws is coming back.
It's the anti-Trinity.
It's going to have Red Hood, Bizarro, and Artemis. Mm-hmm. And they're basically, they build it as, these are the broken archetypes, obviously. These are the broken people. Bizarro is the opposite of Superman. So you've got that kind of playing out. We'll see where that goes. Obviously, Red Hood is a main character in the Batman universe. He's had couple of different solo titles, obviously, with the New 52. They're hoping that making more of a team-up book with these three kind of archetypes will help, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, so we'll see how that goes. Let's see. Cyborg. Did we talk about Cyborg?
I don't think we did.
All right.
Except for me calling him Cyborg before.
Cyborg, yes. Him too. Well, so Cyborg, one of the biggest things that they're going to do with this title is they're going to build a rogues gallery for him. He's never really had a rogues gallery, and that's why, you know, a lot of people look at him like, this is going to be a twice-monthly title. What are you going to possibly have to fill 2 issues a month about? Now we know. They're going to build out a rogues gallery. And they're also going to look at the balance between being human and being machine. They're really going to take a deeper look into the character himself. We didn't get any kind of idea as to if they're going to do something similar with the Wonder Woman title, where there's going to be one issue a month is going to be focused on kind of the internal battle of man and machine, whereas one is going to be building a rogues gallery. We don't know that, but I wouldn't be surprised if they did something along those lines.
Sure.
So that was that's Cyborg. Or Borg.
Kind of RoboCop-esque.
Yeah. Kind of try and figure out who he is and where he's going. We talked about JLA. We talked about Teen Titans. Batman Beyond. We already spoiled this once. We'll spoil it again. Terry McGinnis is going to be back. Whew, thank goodness for that. I know my wife will be very happy. So that's going to be taking place. And then the last book that I've got on here that we haven't talked about yet is Trinity.
Yeah. So that was going to be another twice monthly book?
I believe so.
Oh, no, monthly title. It's going to be a monthly title.
I believe not.
So what they, you know, they had with the New 52, you had Superman, Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman. And it kind of, it got to the point where those books weren't hitting sustainable numbers.
Yep.
There were some decent stories in them, but you know, DC, I think, realized again, pumping out those books that are kind of coming in on the bottom half of the Diamond 100.
Top 300 or 100, yeah.
Yeah, we're just, it's not a way to do it. So a Trinity book, they're hoping that combining the sales of Superman, Wonder Woman, and Superman, Batman will be a book that will fit in that top 50. I'm sure they're hoping it fits in the top 10, but either way.
Yeah, and
that's going to, so that'll be replacing Superman, Wonder Woman, and Superman, Batman.
One of the things that they talked about is how instead of making it, you know, a versus feel at times, that this book is going to be, how do these three complement one another? Where do they fit in where another one of those three doesn't? So it's going to be really playing on their strengths as a team instead of, you know, Superman versus Batman, that kind of a feel, which, you know, for me, that's one of the things that I really don't like. I don't like when, you know, Marvel, DC, whoever it is, pits their superheroes against one another. It really, to me, doesn't seem to build the brand much. It doesn't seem
to. So you won't be seeing Civil War in 2 days?
Well, I haven't seen Batman v Superman yet, and I'm wearing a Batman shirt.
Well, there you go.
But I'm not writing it out saying that I won't see it. It's just, to me, it is not as exciting. I would rather learn about the character growth, the team building, as opposed to kind of the having your bigs fight one another. And it just, I don't know. There's so much more they could do.
This will be, and I'm maybe missing something, but I believe the third book with that title that DC put out, I think there was a prestige format series that Matt Wagner put out in the 90s called Trinity or early 2000s. And then Kurt Busiek put out one of the weekly or bi-weekly or bi-monthly series that DC put out called Trinity in the 2000s, which was it was a pretty decent series, you know, with Kurt Busiek, it heavily involved a lot of continuity, but it was a good book. So I, you know, it's certainly a book I think that's cashing in on the fact that the three of them just showed up in a big budget movie, but hopefully it'll end up pulling its weight.
Yeah. So we'll see what that does. The only other thing that we didn't really touch on, and I have to admit to not being very well versed in Commandy. Are you?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So the Commandy Challenge.
Sounded pretty cool. Commandy, of course, was the Jack Kirby character.
Yep.
Created after Kirby left Marvel, came to DC, and Kirby had that kind of renaissance where he had made, you know, all the new guys. So he was doing the New Gods, he was doing Mr. Miracle, he was doing his run on Superman's pal Jimmy Olsen, he did Commandy, he did OMAC, he did all these big, really cool series, and Commandy was Jack Kirby's take on sort of Planet of the Apes in a way. Commandy was this kid that had been raised in a bunker, and it was after this kind of long after this apocalypse had hit, and he was named after the bunker that he was in. I don't know if you even know this, Eric.
No,
but he was, the reason his name is Commandy was because the bunker that he was in was called Command D, the Command D bunker. So he's named Commandy. And he ends up leaving the bunker in the first issue, that very iconic Kirby cover where Commandy's in like a raft and the Statue of Liberty's in the background. And over the next however many issues ends up, you know, meeting all sorts of talking animals that have evolved through radiation or what have you to essentially take over the Earth. And with this new Commandy challenge, Commandy's a character who Kirby was able to harness that energy that he had and make Commandy just a really cool book. I've gone back and I've read just about every issue. There's that really iconic issue of Commandy where he, on the cover, it has him finding Superman's suit in a cave, you know, and it's got that, it's got Commandy finding the classic S, which was just super cool imagery. And it was a really, it was just a cool book. If you're a fan of the old Planet of the Apes series, Commandy is totally up your alley. And that's obviously what the biggest influence on Kirby was. But the Commandy Challenge that's out right now is a challenge where they took this old Jack Kirby map where he had sort of drawn out what the world looked like in the Commandy future. But he hadn't really done much to explore it. He hadn't gone on and charted out Commandy's adventures in all these different realms. And what they did was they took this original Commandy map that Kirby had drawn, and they broke it up into
12
sectors, essentially.
I've got the creative teams for it.
Perfect. And they numbered each sector, 1 through 12, sort of arbitrarily numbered them because it does not go in any kind of order. And if you look at this map, this Commandy map, it's got, you know, certain areas like the Midwest is, you know, run by, I'm just making this up right now, but like run by the rat people or something. And so he's got all these crazy ideas that he came up with back on this map, and they're assigning these sectors to different creative teams. So what they did was they lined up 12 writers and 12 artists.
13, actually.
Well, 13, yes. They lined up 13, but they lined up 12 artists and 12 writers that were each assigned
a sector.
Randomly a sector. So they randomly assigned a writer and randomly assigned an artist. They did not take writers and artists that are used to working together. They wanted to have a completely fresh take
sort of
on the Commandy world.
There's and one so pairing that's very familiar with
there
another.
Is, well, there is. But other than that, it's they randomly assigned a certain sector of this Kirby map. And so you're going to get shoot out a random creative team to me.
Dan Abnett and Dale Eaglesham.
Dan Abnett, Dale Eaglesham are going to get assigned to, for instance, I'm just making this up again, Sector 7, which may correspond to like Eastern Europe on the Jack Kirby Commandy map, which he wrote out a bunch of details for, who lives there, you know, what group of creatures. And Dan Abnett and Dale Eaglesham will then create a story of Commandy in that sector. And then they're going to leave it on a cliffhanger, and that cliffhanger is going to be continued into the next creative team. But also, they have to write out a prose version of how they would pick up that cliffhanger if they were doing the next book. So that's going to be continued through all 12 sectors of this original Kirby map. Now, the 13th creative team, which I believe was that Len Wein?
The 13th team is Len Wein and Jose Luis Garcia Lopez.
It's a heck of a creative team. Their task is to tie the previous 12 together, which is why they're calling it the Commandy Challenge, because it is going to be kind of a challenge to make a flowing narrative out of 12 different separate pieces of work. But there you go. You want to read some of the creative teams?
Sure. So the creative teams are Dan Abnett and Dale Eaglesham, Peter J. Tomasi and Neil Adams. This one is the people that might be slightly familiar with one another, husband and wife Amanda Connor and Jimmy Palmiotti. James Tinney IV and Carlos De Anda. Bill Wingham and Yvonne Heiss. Steve Orlando and Philip Tan. Marguerite Bennett and Dan Juergens. Keith Giffen and Steve Root.
Steve Root. That's awesome.
Tom King and Kevin Eastman. Greg Pak and Joe Prado.
Kevin Eastman, by the way. Now that's kind of, it's kind of big.
Yeah.
They got Kevin Eastman doing a mainstream DC book.
With Tom King, their newly anointed Batman writer.
Kevin Eastman, of course, one of the co-creators of the Ninja Turtles.
So Greg Pak and Joe Prado. Rob Williams and Walt Simonson. Gail Simone and Ryan Sook. And then Len Wein and Jose Luis Garcia Lopez.
Now, I think Ryan Sook is probably the only person on that list to have done some Commandy work before. I believe he did. I think he did a cover or something. I could be wrong. But anyways, it's a big old Kirby Commandy fan. I'm pretty excited to see where they take it.
So that was it for the books. We got into some questions. We covered some of the answers that we were talking so far. I just have a few talking points that I'll throw out there, and then we can do a little wrap up on everything. Is that all right?
Mm-hmm.
So some of the takeaways that I had, some of the talking points they gave us was they've learned that digital sales are stagnant. They haven't grown anymore, and in some cases they're actually shrinking.
Mm-hmm.
And they see that as kind of indicative of a couple things. Number one, again, if the stories aren't interesting, it doesn't matter if it's physical or digital, people aren't going to buy it. But number two, there's that confidence of physical comics lasting because of the tactile experience, whether that be the physical ownership of an item that's could be considered a collectible, or just the fact of holding a book when you're reading it. There's something about it that people like. So in the DC and Vertigo side of things, they see flatlining digital sales. We can't tell anything beyond that. But.
Sure. I'd like to think that's the case. I have my own theory on why that may be. But I think when tablets and e-readers, the Nook, the Kindle, things like that really first started coming out, I think that it was a novelty and people were getting whatever they could on to read digitally. I think that what's happened over the last couple of years is you've had a lot of people that used to religiously carry around a tablet or buy the whatever the newest tablet was that has switched over to iPhones. You look at the or any kind of smartphone, you look at the size of some of the smartphones that are out there now, and people say that they don't need tablets anymore. I know a lot of people that don't. They used to have tablets, and now they use their bigger smartphone. And to me, it is not entertaining to read a digital comic book on a smartphone. You know, I guess you could scan it in panel by panel, but what are you going to do when you get to that big double splash page or something like that? I think it's just harder to read because I've heard the same thing with traditional print novels. And I think more than anything, I would guess that the initial gimmick of reading books digitally has sort of faded away. And I think technologically it's not as appealing as it was when you had these big screens that you carried around with you everywhere.
Yeah. And I think novels and comics are a little bit different than newspapers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the newspaper story tends to be in many cases shorter, quicker,
very consumable.
Yeah.
Quickly consumable. So, sure.
So that's the digital talk.
Tech news.
Yeah. $299. How long? You know, this is something that Dan seemed to be very passionate about. I think Jim was a little bit indifferent on it, but Dan said that $299 was that kind of that sweet spot, that price point where people felt like they could pay that amount of money and what they were getting was equal to that value. Mm-hmm. He did not like the $399. Definitely did not like $4.99. So the question of how long is $2.99 going to stick around was answered basically by saying, you know, we have to pay our artists. We have to keep the lights on. So, and our creators, not just artists, but we have to keep the lights on. And if the books are selling well at $2.99, there's no reason to change it. If they dip below certain sales numbers, they'll have to reassess what they do at that time. He made it sound like they were open to whatever solution is out there. It could mean cutting titles. It could mean raising prices. It could mean a mix of the two.
One of the questions that led into was initial trade pricing because of the $2.99 books. Now, do you remember the prices that were shouted out there?
$12.99 and $14.99.
Yeah, $12.99, $14.99, depending on the length of the arc. And they made sure to specify that these were not going to be strictly six issue arcs that were being put out.
Right.
That the size of the trade would correspond to whatever the story that was being told was. And I think the main example that they gave was Wonder Woman, how Wonder Woman is going to use the alternating art style as sort of almost an excuse to tell different stories in two eras. And it's going to tell stories in the past and in the present. And they're hoping that the stories in the past will complement those in the present. But the way that the book will be collected will be you're going to have a collection of stories that take place in the past and then a collection of stories that take place in the present. Even if the initial release of the monthly books does not necessarily come out that way.
Yep.
And so it sounds like they're going to be doing even the trade releases a little bit different than they were doing with the New 52.
One of the biggest things about that is they're going paperback first. And they're going to try and reduce delay. They're going to try and get those trades out right away. I think very very similar to Image. Mm-hmm. Image tends to be really good at getting their trades out very quick. So, but they did say paperback first.
So now it's just on Marvel to not keep shelling those $25 hardcovers at us.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. Arcs, story arcs. My question in particular was, how are we going to get new readers onto this? And beyond just, you know, oh, read Rebirth number one and you'll be set. How are we going to get someone 8 months, 10 months, 12 months down the road to jump on a new book or just a completely new reader? And the answer was they're going to start putting callbacks at the beginning of their story arcs to help get a reader caught up, whether you've read the previous arc and need a refresher, or whether you are brand new to the medium in general, to the title in general. They're going to start including callbacks. And as a, you know, 7 years in, I'm definitely nowhere close to experienced enough to know everything that's happened in the past. And shoot, there's times where I'd like a little callback just to say, you know, back in this day and age, this happened. You know, just something to kind of give me some frame of reference. So I think that's going to be really, really good. Another one of the things that Dan said that he really wanted was he wanted the oh crap moments. He wants those really anxiety-provoking cliffhangers to be present. Not hokey, not gimmicky, and not just, you know, okay, well, we're riding along the story and we just wait till next week. He wants readers to be anxiously awaiting that next shipment, like knocking down the door Wednesdays to come in and get the titles.
We would like that too. And
we're open Wednesdays.
We are.
With new titles.
Very true. One of the other things that he talked about was that the DC Rebirth 80-page special would have the most, I believe he used the term, the most controversial thing that DC has ever done. Now, normally that's kind of a hokey thing. I remember back when, and I'm sure a lot of the people listening would remember when, right before House of M came out, and Brian Bendis was talking about how it would break the internet in half, or something like that. There's a lot of hyperbole that's involved in comic books and comic book announcements, and a lot of times it just sounds like one-upsmanship, who can just, you know, do the next most shocking thing. And he said, this is not what we're doing. He said, we're doing it in a good way. I don't know what that means. None of us know what that means. There were no details given. We'll find out in 3 weeks, but 4 weeks, actually. We'll find out soon enough, but I think it sounds like they are really going to go for broke on the way that they're going to do the transition from the New 52 to Rebirth. Hopefully it's not going to be a hokey thing. I remember Identity Crisis when that first came out, and how many people were alienated by the Dr. Light mind wipe and the kind of rape angle that they played up in that book. That was something I would certainly say DC succeeded at having a very controversial bit of content in a mainstream superhero book. At the same time, I think these days it's sort of looked back on and ridiculed a little bit. So hopefully whatever they do is more keeping in the theme of the, you know, the DC characters than something like Identity Crisis. But, yeah, it'll be interesting to see if it ends up just being hyperbole or if they really do something positive and shocking.
Yeah. That was all that I had for the actual 3 hour kind of sit down talk.
Feels like we've talked longer than the Rebirth Roadshow.
Yeah, we might have. But
I would like to thank DC for the open bar after the
The food, the snacks, the hors d'oeuvres, the whatever it was.
Lovely Starbucks coffee.
Yep.
Everybody from DC that we talked to,
wonderful hosts.
I mean, the definition of professionalism. I think everyone was incredibly. you could tell that they were very as interested in as anyone could be in hearing our story about, you know, the shop, where we've taken it, where we've gone with it, and where we want to go with it, and hopefully with their product. Everybody was incredibly supportive of us. One thing of note, Eric briefly alluded to it before, was that we met a couple of people that were sitting behind us from, was it somewhere in Minnesota?
Yeah, Apple Valley, Minnesota.
They had been planning on, they wanted to open a shop by Free Comic Book Day, and it just wasn't in the cards. Everything didn't fall into place in time for them. But they were going to be starting a new comic book store, opening it the day that Rebirth starts, which I thought was pretty cool. And we talked to one of the guys for a while, very nice guy. It was neat to get insight from people that are relatively new. So new that they don't even have their store open, and get their thoughts on things. But it sounds like they are using DC Rebirth as essentially a launch pad for both their DC readership and their store. Yep. You know, it's pretty neat to hear stuff like that, how that DC Rebirth date has dictated the opening date of an entire new comic shop.
Yep.
It's pretty neat.
Yeah. And as far as Rebirth goes for us in our shop, we will have every title.
Mm-hmm.
They will be available. So for those of you that are, you know, kind of hesitant, but not, you know, not sure what you want to get, knowing you want to get stuff, we will have every title so that
every
you can
title,
look at it.
Every variant.
Every variant. We're going to have an entire UPS truck just for DC Rebirth, it feels like. So it will be well represented. Make sure that you come in and check them out. We will do our very, very best to preview as much of them as possible, so when you come in, we can give you, you know, heads up as to what you might see or what you're looking for, kind of get you
that. It's a tough job.
We're up to the challenge.
I think we can do it.
And beyond that, you know, we've got some pretty big stuff coming up here on Saturday, May 7th.
Free Comic Book Day.
Free Comic Book Day. For those of you that follow us on Facebook, you will have seen, or if you get our emails, you will have seen our sales that we'll be having. Basically, 40% off all of our books except for the wall books, which will be 10% off. We'll have tens of thousands of dollar books that will also be 40% off coming out of storage just for this event. We just dropped a whole bunch of wall books, lots of new Walking Dead, some great classic DC and Marvel titles, and there will be more coming out before we get to Saturday.
We literally got a nice new big collection in yesterday. Last night came in.
And big. Big.
Yeah.
Not just two or three key books with another 300 fillers.
Right. And we'll be dropping, you know, we have a couple other collections and books that we've held back.
Yep.
Until Saturday. And I think, you know what? We'll give a little bit of a preview. We're going to be dropping on Saturday. We're going to be putting out an X-Men or Avengers number one. We're going to be putting out an Action 252. We're going to be putting out a Batman Adventures 12. We're going to be putting out Giant Size X-Men number one, Hulk 181. A lot of stuff that we've kind of had waiting in the wings for the right moment. And Free Comic Book Day, of course, is that right moment. So we're going to drop a lot of cool books, a lot of stuff that, you know, you probably won't find at any of the surrounding stores. We want to have that wow factor when you come in here. We want to have these big books, and they will be for sale.
And, yeah, we'll be open at 10,
yep,
which I think is earlier than any of the other shops around us. I know one's opening at 11, the other one opens at noon. So make us your first stop.
Yeah, and it's also worth mentioning, it will be an incredibly busy day here for many reasons. We're also hosting a Pokemon League Challenge the same day. So our gaming side at the store is going to be pretty much taken up. Later that night, we're going to be having a Smash Brothers tournament. So we're going to have things going on all day in here. It's going to be probably our busiest day we are anticipating since Black Friday.
Yep.
But we would love to see you. If you're anywhere in the area, stop in. We're going to have phenomenal sales going on. One of the other things that we just dropped was our new subscription tier, where depending on how many books you have in your pull list, the more books you have, the better your discount's going to be, all the way up until if you have over 50 books, it's 25% off. So we would love to set you up with a new pull list. Not to mention, we're also doing a finder's fee. If you start a pull list, or if you refer a friend here and they start a pull list after the first month of picking their books up, we will give you a $15 gift card. So we're starting all sorts of neat stuff this yep. month, and I think it would behoove anyone in the area to at the very least stop by on Saturday.
Absolutely. The staff will be well represented. I believe throughout the day all four of us will be here.
Mm-hmm.
You, myself, Mike, and Sam will all be here.
Yep.
So no shortage of staff to chat with and say hi to.
I think my beautiful wife will be here.
I think my wife and daughter might be making a stop in as well. So that'll be exciting. And, you know, again, if this is the comic book holiday where we as retailers give back to you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also the opportunity to bring your friends who may not be into comics and see if there's something that they may like.
Yep.
So anything else that you want to throw in before we wrap this guy up?
No, I think we've covered all of our bases.
All right.
I think I'm also sobering up, which is not as cool.
That means it's time to go home.
Yeah.
But with that being said, thanks for listening, and hopefully you got some good information about DC Rebirth. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, feel free to send them to podcast@cowabungacomics.com. You can follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/IncrediCow. Mm-hmm. Also on Twitter @IncrediCow or @IncrediCow. And I guess, you know, we'll have to see what we're going to do for next week. Rebirth has come and we're waiting on that. Maybe we'll do some book reviews.
So it's a free comic book day recap.
We might have a free comic
also,
book day recap.
Also, I think we're going to try. Now, again, we did record the entire Rebirth Roadshow. I think we do want to add that the audio is a little bit echoey, but it's certainly intelligible. So we're going to try to work some of that in there. If there's anything specific that you want to hear, you're listening to this and you think, boy, I really wanted to hear what Jim Lee had to say about Scooby Apocalypse. We can probably make it happen for you.
Yep.
Just drop us a line.
No.
But I think, you know, for the most part, we'll do what we can to make that audio available.
Yep. And again, email us podcast@cowabungacomics.com. Our phone number is 262-569-9999 or cowabungacomics.com. Cowabunga spelled with a K. And with that, we'll sign off and we will talk to you next time.